What's up, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the RFC LA Fan Pod, brought to you by the Bonus Point Podcast. My name is TJ Olsen, and we're back again chatting everything RFC LA. So as you most of you know who listen to this podcast, this is the second time we've had a pro rugby team join the MLR, and we want to make sure that this team is around for a long time. So big thank you to all the fans here in Los Angeles for staying strong during the hiatus. And let's keep the passion for rugby alive and motivating us here at the Bonus Point to bring more local content to LA fans. But with that in mind, our goal was to bring some awesome guests on this podcast. And we've set the bar pretty high this week as we are joined by one of the big role players of this new franchise. This man has had a tremendous amount of experience having played for the Māori All Blacks, New Zealand Under 20s, various Super Rugby franchises, Manawatu in the NPC, had a stint over in Japan, and now he's here in LA after winning a championship with New York. So please welcome our next guest on the show, Jason Emery. Welcome to the show, brother. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm good. Thanks for having me, bro. That's a hell of an intro, though. One of the big ones I've heard of.
Well, when you've had a career like yours, mate, you got to come out swinging. So I think we've obviously got a fair amount of stuff to get into because we obviously want to chat about your career, the move to LA, and as well as the team's mentality heading into the weekend. But let's start off with something fun. I've got a few rapid fire questions in a segment that we
All
like
right,
to call.
Let me get comfortable then.
Yeah. It's called tap and go. So obviously you've been around the game long enough and you know that sometimes a tap and go comes at you quickly, whether you like it or not. So I'm going to throw you some quick questions and I just want you to come at me with the first thing that pops in your head. Okay. So you're ready for this? Awesome. So first question, what's your preference, attack or defense?
Attack.
Favorite pre-game song or artist?
Maybe Chris Brown.
That's a good one. I'll give you that one. That's a good hype up guy. There you go.
Yeah.
Which one do you prefer, home or away RFC LA kit?
Oh, I'm gonna go home. I like the dark blue.
Nice. That's good. That's a good one. Which one would you rather do? Would you rather whack someone with a good step or just burn them and leave them in the dust?
Oh, I'm old now, mate. So I'd say step someone. I can't really guess anyone these days unless it's a prop.
That's still someone. I'll give you that one. That's good stuff. All right, sport you'd play if you weren't playing rugby?
I'm not good at golf.
That's a good one. Plenty of other rugby players and other athletes love the golf. Yeah. So that's a good choice and nice and quiet. Good fun with your mates. That's good fun. All right. So go to drink when you're out having a few with the team.
Coors Light, definitely.
There you go.
The good big stuff. Bots too, the big ones.
the big chunky ones.
You need a couple of those.
Yeah, the tallies. Yeah, I love that. Love that. Okay. Yeah. Standout moment of your career.
Oh man, probably winning a championship for Manawatu actually. When I think back now, it's kind of a long time ago, but we can probably get into that a little bit later. But that's probably the highlight so far. Yeah,
that's a great memory. There you go. All right, idol growing up.
Christian Cullen. Yeah, he was. He was quick, had a good step, and he was strong. And I don't think it was that tall. I've never met him in person, but he didn't look that tall. He's just real quick.
I mean, you couldn't have chosen a better player. Jeez, that's a pretty good idol to look up to.
Yeah.
Oh, far out. All right, two fun ones to end it out. So, worst dresser on the RFC LA team?
Worst dresser? I'll chuck my flatmate in that. Probably Bruce. He's always wearing some kind of like kit, team kit. It doesn't have to be LA, it's other teams he plays for. So I'll put Bruce in there.
That's a good one. All right, last one. Best dresser on the RFC LA team. Who's got the most style?
I'd say Austin White. He's always got nice looking shoes, a chain, good looking man. So I'd say Austin White takes the best dresser.
And with the chain. There you go. Okay. Well,
yeah.
thank you for getting into that with me with some quick answers. So we can dive deeper. You can take an easy deep breath now because we're going to chat about your career and what led you down the path eventually and now you're here with IFC LA. But let's start off with you in school, because I know you went to Palmerston North Boys High School and you made the first 15 there in grade 11. And while you're at school, you also signed with Manawatu as a contracted player. So was it something as a young fella that you always thought that you could see yourself playing rugby professionally, or was it particularly like a certain time in your career when you realised this could be a possibility?
Yeah, no, that's a good question. Like at school, teachers would ask me, like, what do you want to be? And I was always saying, like, rugby player. And they'd be like, oh, like, you know, you'd kind of brush it off. That's when I was at primary intermediate. So, I just love the game. I just love playing rugby. And then it was probably at Palmerston North Boys, actually, where they had kind of a pathway. I could see a pathway to being a professional rugby player. So that's kind of probably about that 15 where I, you know, thought I could make it professional. Make it professional, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Around that age, yeah, that I actually really wanted to. And I've just been lucky. So I've basically been straight out of school and into a professional environment, which, you know, I'm very lucky for. I think it's my 12th year maybe playing professional, which is a bit scary. I think about that. That just makes me feel old, actually, when I think about that. Yeah. But yeah, I've definitely been lucky, man. I don't ever take it for granted. And when it's a tough, you know, when days can be tough, you just think about kind of where it all started and like why you play the game. Yeah. Sorry, I got deep on you early there.
No, the deep is the best. I love it. We got to start off with the good stuff there. Keep people engaged. Yeah. I love it. So, well, that's a great point, because you did go on to compete at a Junior Rugby World Cup with the New Zealand Under 20 team. You guys came in second place during that, and then later down the track, you finally made your debut at the age of 18, which is crazy to say. It's like when I say finally, it's like that's something where you're still very young. You're just still in school, and in 2012 you get to debut against Wellington, and you don't only get to debut in your first NPC match, you get to also score the only try for your team in that game. So what was that like, running out in the Manawatu colours for the first time and debuting and getting to do that?
Yeah, it was the first year out of school. So I was with Manawatu Academy, and they said that we had to work or study. So I just took what I thought was the easy option, was to study. And I did sport, but I didn't finish it. We can talk about that later. And then I actually got asked to trial for the under 20s, so I was a year younger, because Molokai Fikitoa wasn't eligible, I think. I don't know, yeah, could just come from Tonga maybe, and they have to do a certain amount of stand down. So I actually got to trial in the second match, and I went all right and made the team then. And then after that 20s competition, I got signed on a full contract with Manawatu. And then, yeah, I wasn't expecting to play at all. We had some pretty senior players that in the Manawatu team that I looked up to, and I was watching on TV, 6 months before. And then, yeah, to play, I think the first, yeah, I can't remember actually. You did say Wellington, yeah, to play that game. And kind of that whole year was just like everything was moving fast. And playing at home, my parents were there. My girlfriend, who's my wife now, was there as well, and her parents. So yeah, it'll actually be cool to look back and watch a game, because I think we lost that game. So that's, yeah, I can't remember actually, but it does bring back memories when we start talking about it.
Yeah. Well, I think there's one thing I want to touch on regarding that year, because it's definitely something that I saw, and I kind of got a little bit of just starstruck with all the talent in this photo that I saw. But if we were to look at this photo here, at your Steinlager Awards that you attended on the stage, you've got a collection of great rugby talent with the likes of yourself, Robbie Fruin, Conrad Smith, Richie McCaw, so Steve Hansen. So when you see this photo, what kind of memories come to your head when you look at it?
Yeah, I actually totally forgot about this, eh? That trophy that trophy's at mum and dad's house. So yeah, I remember me and my obviously wife at the girlfriend at the time went to these awards, and we were like, what were we, 18, 19, and we were seeing Conrad Smith, Richie McCaw, I think Dan Carter was there as well. And I wanted to ask for photos with him, but I was like, oh, I don't want to be that, that annoying young guy that wants a photo
Yeah.
with him. So this is a cool photo, man. I haven't seen this. But yeah. But no,
I'll
it was
flick it
just
over to you.
like, yeah, just, yeah, that just brings back lots of memories. But it was just, I'm like pinching myself because a year ago I was in school, watching these guys on TV, and then here I am, like standing next to them, having dinner with them, and just seeing them in person was, yeah, starstruck. I'm already naturally shy, so I'm not going to go up to them and start a conversation.
Yeah, well, it clearly went up from here because you fast forward a little bit and then you get to go and start your career and get signed in Super Rugby. So, what were the big differences you noticed going from an NPC program to a Super Rugby program?
Oh, it was intense. So I had my first pre-season. I'll give you a rundown of like a single day we had. I think we had to be in at 5 a.m. And then I think we had a running block in the morning, come in for like a quick shake, and then we'd have a gym session and then a skill session, I think. So that's three sessions but before 9 a.m. And we'd actually go do community work, like I don't know, painting over people graffitiing on I don't know, walls or something. We'd do that for 2 hours. Then we'll have to have an afternoon session, which would be 2 hours long. This would take us to 5, I think, 5 p.m. And then we'd have to be swimming for an hour. And that was 5 days a week. And that was my first pre-season. And I was like, man, if this is pre-season, I don't know if I can do this for 3 years. Because I signed 3 years. So I was like, man, this is. But that's just the way Jamie Joseph wanted us to kind of show what the Highlanders kind of culture was, and that's the work. We work hard for each other, and we've all come from different regions. So yeah, it was a good welcome to Super Rugby. I definitely, yeah, I haven't done anything harder since then, to be honest.
Yeah, because I think a lot of people they'll always talk about the year that the Highlanders had previously in and then the lead up towards the final, and I think they start to really see the creative mind of Jamie Joseph as someone who it's all about the discipline and the mindset and putting in like really good staples into a program to just build into it. And sometimes it doesn't work, sometimes it does, but you can see the proof is in the pudding with a lot of the teams that he's coached is that he's an incredible coach and a pretty smart guy.
Yeah, definitely. Him and Tony Brown just got a good combo. Like Jamie's kind of yeah, I'll put this. Yeah, he'll tell you how it is, which like, I love it as a coach, like from a co as a player, hearing from a coach. Like I just love a coach when he just says how it is. And then
Like
Tony
very
Brown's just
transparent, like
Tony,
doesn't beat around the bush.
yeah, nah, and just giving you the facts. And Tony Brown's more of, yeah, really creative. I don't know if you saw the kick Lima Subuanga kicked over his head against Hurricanes. Like he's coming up with moves like this, and we're thinking like, what? We're like, what is this? No one does this stuff. And then I'm pretty sure Lima didn't kick. I think he kicked a few into his head, and a few went like that way. And then in the game, it paid off. But that's what Tony Brown breeds. But if you prepare, do the reps. When you come to the game, you just go out and play. And that's something I've taken from him, because I've been coached under him a few times. So that's something I take from him. But I've actually got a good story about Jamie Joseph when he humbled me very, yeah, he humbled me quite. It was painful actually. I had like watery eyes and stuff. I think I had a, I forgot what game it was. Might have been my second or third year. I had a shocker. And every time you play bad, you always know. Oh man, because we're by the offices is where the laptops are, where we do our review and preview. He used to just call me Jay. He's like, Jay, come to my office, close the door. And I was like, oh man, here we go. And he basically, yeah, he basically told me how bad I played. I was like, yeah, I know. And he just got like a piece of paper, and he's like, dropped it to the ground, and it like went onto the floor. He's like, what is this? And I looked at it. I was like, oh, I don't know, paper dropping to the ground. He's like, nah, you're at the bottom of the pile now. You got to work your way back up. And I was like, holy,
Oh.
I was like, man, So I was like, I'm pretty sure I was 2021, where I had like nearly crying. I had to say water in my eyes. I was like, yeah, sweet. Went into the car, rang my girlfriend. I was like, holy shit. Jamie just humbled me. But it could have gone two ways, I could have talked about it, just taken on the chin and moved on. So yeah, it was pretty, he's a pretty ruthless man. That probably sums Jamie Joseph up quite well,
Oh
I'd say.
man, what a story. Yeah, because I think that's the type of stuff where it is very cutthroat with sports. It's like even
Yeah,
if you are a
100%.
18 to 20, 21-year-old fella, it's like you can't really ease people into that kind of situation. You've got to just kind of show them what goes on and just go, this is what it is. And some people can handle it and some people you can't. But
Yeah.
obviously that's something that you've taken with you into your career now, and it's kind of just a memory that you can always go to.
Yeah, and you gotta be like, as a, any athlete would say, you just gotta be like, we're all gonna have bad games, that's. It's like, hey, bounce back. And I knew that. I don't think I got an opportunity for like 6 or 7 weeks. So it taught me a lesson. Like, you just, you gotta know your stuff and, prepare well and all that kind of stuff. So it was a good reminder of when you think you're there, you're not really there, and you get a reminder, eh? So it's a good story to tell, but at the time it was devastating.
I could imagine. I don't know how I would take it if that was me, but yeah, that's a good one. But yeah, I think when it comes to coaching genius, Tony Brown has been someone that I've always looked up to as a coach myself, and someone that he's just so innovative with the way things he's done. Like when you watched him coaching for Japan or other situations, you look at some of the stuff that comes out of their phase play or just something like that. It's incredible. Oh man.
Sorry, you cut
Okay,
out a
well,
bit.
no,
Oh,
all good. All
I'll
good.
turn this
Well,
on. I'll turn it on anyways, but.
have you got any favorite matches or memories? I know you've obviously played with the Highlanders and obviously with the Sunwolves as well. So when you think of your career in Super Rugby, what were some favorite memories of yours?
Definitely my debut against the Hurricanes, which is so I was born in Tauranga up north, and then I lived in Wellington for like 10 years. So Hurricanes was like kind of like my team, like I watched Christian Cullen, Tarumanga, and John Lomu. So they were my team that I always support. So the debut against them was, it was quite weird, but at the same time I was excited. I got to mark Conn Smith, I think. So as a debut, that wasn't too bad. I mean, it could be worse. You could go against, I don't know, Robbie Frewin or Rennie Ranger. That's definitely one. But probably playing for Māori All Blacks is one as well. I've still got my debut jersey actually. Played against Japan and Kobe. So I scored two tries too, so that jersey's not going to go anywhere. That'll be up in the man cave when rugby's done. But yeah, probably those two, and then probably the game I talked about, Manawatū winning the championship final in Manawatū, in Palmerston North, sorry. That was this thing's like, I get tingly thinking about it. Just remembering that the crowd was full, and they actually had the stock cars on, so they had the fence up, and people were like climbing over the fence. And like at the time, you're kind of just, soaking it in. But when you look back on the videos and watch the highlights, that's when you remember how actually special it is. And yeah, so I'd probably say those three.
Oh man, well,
All right,
it's funny
there.
that
But
you
yeah, there's
mentioned
so many
the
more too. There's
yeah,
so many
it's funny
more as
that you
well, but.
mentioned the Māori All Blacks portion, because I know when it comes to the Māori All Blacks getting selected or just representing them, it's something where it's important to so many people across the country, and it's you get to see how much passion and mana is played in that jersey, because you even just before the game starts, you get to see a very specific haka, obviously very different to the All Blacks national team, and then a lot of people get to experience that for the first time, because obviously the Māori All Blacks don't play as often as the All Blacks, and every time I see that haka, I get tingles. Like I got to watch one of my best mates who was from school play in the game against Moana Pacifica, and he was in the 23 jersey, and just watching him do that haka for the first time, I was getting goosebumps, and I'm not even playing in the game. So it's something where you know how much it means to people, but what was that feeling when you get to come out, you get to put that jersey on for the first time, and you get to perform that specific haka?
Yeah, I was like, I watched some Māori All Blacks, so I kind of knew the actions of the haka, just not the words. But as soon as we get into camp, we get hakaed in from the boys that are away for the Māori All Blacks. So, and then I think every night we'd do haka practice. We'd go in like groups of five or six, and one of the leaders would just, you know, how to do the haka, and then all the new guys would have to like haka to see where like everyone would stand. Or what's it? Where everyone is in the lineup and stuff. So that was quite daunting, but we did a lot of like learnt a lot about Māori culture, and that's probably something that like looking back now, I probably wish I did a bit more. Like I wish I could speak Māori. I could understand a little bit of it, but we kind of moved away from my Māori side, like with my family, just with Mum and Dad, where they're working and stuff like that. So being able to connect to my iwi, and I gave my marae and Waikato a Māori All Blacks jersey, which they've hung up in the marae, which is pretty cool. But like I said, when I gave it to them, like it was a big presentation, but I couldn't speak Māori, so I felt quite ashamed that I didn't. I played for Māori All Blacks, but I couldn't speak Māori, so. So it's cool learning about the Māori culture, and just everything that you think you know, and then you get to Māori All Blacks camp and it's like, yeah, just so much stuff. And the haka's cool, and all the boys are so tight because we're all Māori, you know, obviously all the same culture, so it's such an easy culture to go into. I mean, easy team to go into, environment, and just bond with boys because we all share something similar or in common.
Nah, that's awesome. Yeah, I think when you think about the game itself and how that team has progressed over the past few decades, and you can just see the passion in everybody's face, and the fans love it. So I can't wait to see the next year of Māori Test. It's gonna be great, and leading up to the I think the next Lions tour that happens. That's gonna be incredible to watch. But let's move on, and let's chat a little bit about your North American adventure, because obviously you've had some success over here, winning with New York, winning a title with them. And obviously there's never just one player or one thing that goes into winning a title. There's a lot of different moments and pieces, and then you've got to get to that final, and then you've got to perform. But if you could put your finger on a couple of different things that were the secret sauce, or like something that you could look at and go, that's one of the big reasons why we were able to have that title run. Would you be able to think about a couple of things why that would be?
Yeah, like when you look at our season, we went winning every game. Like we went a patch there where we struggled quite a bit. I think it was, I forgot the game, we got pumped, and then we had like I like to call them crisis meetings, but you know, when things aren't going well, when things aren't going well, and we so we had Andy Ellis, Nehe Monoskata, and I think Wasaki Naholo just joined us, and we basically just had a meeting about what other teams think of us, and what's more important, to tackle defense. And we kind of, like, it was a good conversation we had, and then we kind of got a lot of good ideas around like how other teams would look at us and what we want to put more time into. And then after that, yeah, we just played like some good footy, and I felt like it brought us together. We had like a real tight-knit group. I'll definitely say like someone like Andy Ellis was a, this is the first time I met him as well. And I told him this actually, after I had a few beers obviously, but I said I hated him and the Crusaders. and he goes, why? I'm like, oh, you guys just win too much, you're too good. And he just starts laughing. But I can see the, like, why the Crusaders are so good, because like Andy brought like a different culture and like a kind of like a family type vibe, you know, like you actually want to be here, you want to work for one another, and all our partners and families are tight as well, so that makes our job a lot easier off the field stuff sorted and we can just focus on the rugby. So I think it goes a lot deeper than what you see on the field with a team. You know, you can kind of tell a team's going well. You know, if a team's going well, it's obviously their culture's really solid and off the field stuff's fine. Yeah, if that all makes sense. Sorry, I said a few things,
No,
but
no,
yeah, I put
that
it.
makes
Oh
total
yeah.
sense. Yeah,
Yeah, I
I
put it
think
down
it's
to Andy
I
Ellis and leadership. Yeah, it's definitely a man making a run.
Well, I'm the same as I actually got to meet him when he came and played against the Giltinis a few years ago, and it was a really weird feeling because I was very starstruck as well, because I was like,
Yeah.
I'm meeting one of the greatest players to ever play the game, but I also stood there and I was just chopping it up with them, and I was like, should I say it? I don't know. And I was like, yeah, Crusaders though can't handle it. And he's sitting there and he did the same thing. He's like, what do you mean? And I was like, yeah, you guys just win way too much. But honestly, one of the nicest fellas I've ever met in my life. And it's just he took the time to just stick around, have a chat, and just like pick my brain. And it was awesome. But yeah, I think just watching that team and the way you guys were able to battle a lot of adversity and come out through it has to be not just on the field stuff. You have to build the culture. You have to go through the thick of it, and you have to really come together as a squad.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, and I probably missed the butcher out too. If he's listening to this, he'll hate that I missed him out. But he was a key part of all that, and Marty Veal and yeah, Marty Burke and all that. So we went through some adversity that year. I think we were struggling to make the playoffs at one stage. Pretty sure we had to fly to Atlanta to play the semi, I think, and then we had Boston. So we flew away twice to play. Oh, we had to go away from home twice to the final, which was at home, which was pretty cool. But yeah, I think everything has to go right, eh, when you're making a run. Like, we're pretty lucky on the injury front. No one was suspended and we had a full squad, so all that kind of makes, you know, comes together as well to winning.
That's awesome. Okay, well, I know obviously there was a bit of disarray with the whole New York situation. I know you've been interviewed plenty about that, so I won't pick your brain about that. But you've ended up on the opposite side of the coast here. So just first off, just about LA in general, what's your favorite part about living in LA so far?
Oh, the weather, man. Definitely the weather. Definitely the weather. Yeah. Now, I'd like, yeah, just to talk about the New York stuff real quick. Just how I kind of got here, probably is, yeah, like we obviously found out over WhatsApp message, which is not ideal, but we'll save that for another day. And then, yeah, I was stressing, man. I was not sure what was going to go on with, like, how we're going to get paid. And obviously, I've got a wife and three kids, so I was stressing out, like, you know, trying to find a job, really trying to find a, because I knew all the MLR teams late December are all going to be filled up. And I was actually lucky. Stevie rang me, I think, 2 days after. And he sent me a WhatsApp message first. He goes, "Hey, this is Stephen Brett. Give me a call, your friend." And we just started talking. He said he'd love to have me. And I was just yes straight away. And he kind of talked about the team and, you know, how it's new. And it'll be cool to be involved with something new. And yeah, I just said yes straight away. And probably the only tough part about being here is, like, my wife and kids are back home in New Zealand, which is tough. But regarding the situation and how late we got told, my wife talked about it, like, we kind of knew that might be the option for this year. So that's been tough, but the boys have been really good. Quite a tight-knit group, and you know, obviously there's boys that are going through worse things that I'm going through. Like, some didn't even pick up contact, you know. Some boys had to go find work and stuff like that. So, you know, sometimes when you think, like, I do miss my family and that, but other boys are far, you know, worse off than what I am. So yeah.
No, I think that speaks to, I think, your character and a few of the other boys, because obviously some of the boys have gone through the whole ATL restructure as well, and it's a whole different story. So I think that speaks to the culture. But we're currently about halfway through the season, and you've all had to come together, like you said, quite fast to build your own culture, set the club up for success. So when you think about your thoughts on the season so far, and how you and the coaching staff have had to rally together and kind of just bring this together so rapidly. Is there anything that you've seen a part of your squad that's really helped you guys progress through that?
Yeah, I think we're like, obviously like 1-5 is not a good record, but I think we're all pretty frustrated because we know how good we can be. It's just not getting out there and like people aren't seeing like how good we are. Like we're pretty injury. We've got a lot of injuries at the moment, which doesn't help. I think we had 7 of our key experienced players out the last couple of weeks. That doesn't help at all. And I thought the young guys have been stepping up really well. Like they've kind of been, thrown in there, and someone like Maddie and Sammy Walsh and Seth Purdy as well. I thought they've been playing very well. So for them, we've just been trying to get around those young guys, and it's a good opportunity for them to kind of show what they're about. Get their game out and test themselves against some of the best in the MLR. And at the same time, it's when you're not playing and you're injured, it's quite frustrating because like you can't really you can only do so much, you can only say so much and do it. So yeah, I think to sum it up, like we're frustrated, but because we know how good we can be, but I think we showed it probably 30 minutes against Dallas how good we could be, and then it's kind of taken a turn then. But the boys are the boys are strong and we've rallied around each other. And we just don't want to leave any stones unturned, from here till the end of the season.
No, I think that's very well put, because I think in the couple of games that I've been able to see you guys play live, at least, like I think the Houston game, you had to battle a lot of adversity against a really, really tough opponent, and obviously it wasn't the outcome that you wanted, but you could see in patches here and there that there was the opportunity to take the game, and that's those are learnings, especially for a lot of the younger players. So, yeah, I think that's going to be something that's just going to come with reps.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%. And, like, I think probably out of all those games, probably bar the last two, we've kind of been, there or thereabouts, I think. And that just comes down to us getting used to playing with each other and just closing out those tight games. And that'll come with, time playing with each other and just experience for some of the younger boys, I think.
Mm-hmm. Well, speaking of that, let's chat about this weekend, because this is your second doubleheader of this season, as you guys get to share the field with some amazing and some fierce women as the US women take on Canada before you guys take on the Free Jacks. So I had a privilege of going down and attending the women's training session yesterday at the Olympic Training Center, and they're looking crash hot. I'm pretty excited for some of their young players to get some reps in and have a go. But before we chat about your game, is there anything specifically you guys have excited about, or something you're really keen for when it comes to seeing the women this weekend?
Yeah, it's just good to see women playing rugby, like all over the world. Like back home in New Zealand, we're kind of used to, well, not used to it, but it's growing really quickly, and they got the Opiki, which is like the super rugby of women's rugby back home, and the Black Ferns go well as well. So to see Canada and USA women's, hopefully we'll be able to watch a bit before our game, but we'll see how that all works out with our scheduling and stuff. But it's just good to see women and getting involved in rugby around the world, which is cool. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think I'm pretty excited as Kiwi blood to see some of the Black Ferns get some test matches as well, and also see some of the newer players that just got named in their squad. So I think it's shaping up to be a pretty good Pac 4 series. But let's chat a little bit about your game. You boys have a pretty exciting matchup against the New England Free Jacks. And without giving too much away, is there anything you guys have been focusing on in that training or your sessions that are going to be critical to you guys getting a victory in front of a home crowd?
Yeah, like we just want to, but obviously last game before the bye week, we're just basically concentrating on us. We just want to, get back to what we've been good at, and I think our attack, was good at the start of the year, and so to our defense. So we've just been working on ourselves. We've been doing a lot of film, our trainings, and what we're doing. Or just how to be better, because this game will set us up for the run home, hopefully after the bye week. And the bye week's going to be good. It's going to give some of us that are injured an extra week to get ready for the next, I think, 8 games, I think, but now after this bye week. So no, it's exciting. All the boys are excited, and hopefully we have a really good crowd too. And obviously the woman playing before us, so the boys definitely looking forward to it. We know what we're going to expect from Boston. Like, I've played them a lot of times, so I know, definitely know what's coming. And yeah, the boys are excited for it for sure.
Nice. Yeah, I'm excited to see the new kit as well, especially with you guys getting Char Time as the sponsor right on the front of the jersey. So that's going to be really good.
That's
Hopefully
cool.
get some boba there or something. But it wouldn't be the RFCLA fan podcast without some questions from the fans. But we've kind of had to switch it up a little bit because I know some of your teammates, they also seem like they're either fans or they want to just give you a stitch up. So it's we've got a few questions that are coming in. And what I want to do is
Little
I'm
bit
not going
nervous,
to
to be
tell you who
honest.
asked some of these questions. I was a bit nervous to see if I can read them on here, but we'll see how we go. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to name the question. I'm not going to tell you who wrote it in, but you could probably have a guess and see who had the who wrote the question. And I think this one's going to be pretty obvious. Who is your favorite English scrum half at the RFC club?
Oh my God. No, Sam Saunders. Our skipper. Did he say that, did he? Oh, you can't say, eh?
Right on
Actually,
Instagram. I got that from.
he was, I saw him in an Irish under 20s jersey, actually, so he's not really my favorite English halfback.
Shots fired. Here we go. I love.
Yeah.
We're starting off strong. I love it. Okay. The next question. Where did the nickname Ewok originate from?
yeah, that's a good one. So, do you know Ehi West? Yeah, so that under 20s year, my first year, he just started calling me Ewok, and it kind of caught on from that group. But it's from Star Wars, because I don't watch Star Wars, so I just search Ewok. But the thing is, I think it's like ginger and he's here, and I was like, oh, that's you, like you're short and you got ginger hair. I was like, that doesn't make sense, but when one thing sticks, it kind of stuck. So Ewok kind of, when I was young. I actually got called Kid a lot when I was at the Highlanders from Aaron Smith. And then Ewok kind of came back this year because Jason Dam. So I've never been in a team with someone named Jason, another Jason on the team. So like every time, the coach or the boys would go, Jace, and we'll both look, I'm like, oh, you gotta change, someone's gonna change your name. I was like, oh, just call me Ewok. That's what I used to be called. So yeah, that's how it's coming out of the grave now, coming out of ashes.
Well, man, okay. Well, yeah, I think when it comes to nicknames, especially in a rugby club, once it sticks forever.
Oh
It's
yeah,
never going
no, it
away.
does. Yeah,
Oh man. And
I don't
yeah,
mind that,
Ehi
though. It
West
could be
just
worse
trying to
nicknames to be called.
That's very true. Yeah, I've heard some shockers, especially when it comes to rugby nicknames. But yeah, so Ehi West just trying to take some of the shade off his color of his hair and just trying to pass it off to you, eh?
Which I thought was quite rich when I saw the photo, but it's all good.
No, it's a good one. Well, these next two questions, this next one is definitely a stitch up. I don't even know what kind of question this is, but what kind of bowl do you use for your haircuts?
Oh, I know this is definitely one of my friends from Palmerston North. Gonna say Jade. Is it Jade Taduti or Mazu
No, it's this one's
Dujail?
from Cara Pryor.
Oh, Carter, you're kidding. That's rich, actually. That's really rich coming from him. But yes, yeah, the boys do give me a lot of. I kind of like the mid to high fade, and yeah, back in the day, it was it wasn't as, let's just say, it wasn't done professionally, so it did look like kind of like a bowl cut. So, damn, cutter,
I don't think anybody who's played rugby can ever say that they've all had perfect haircuts. So I think especially back in the day when a lot of the boys were rocking the mullets and the dyed hairs with the bleachers in there. I don't think anybody can definitively say they've always had a good haircut. So there you go. I think we you
at least
all
my
got
hair,
one.
At least my hairline's all right, unlike Cutter's. His is going back a bit, so I think my hairline's good.
Man, I've got to rename this podcast to Shots Fired because we're going to get some hate from this one. Oh, this is going to be good. But the last one is a out of the woodworks one. It's who was the best coach you ever had and why was it Leif Hansen?
Yeah, that's definitely someone back home. Mm-hmm. I don't know whether to take this one seriously or just to have a laugh, but Leif Hansen was my first 15 coach. He was a nice lad. Yeah, I liked him. I enjoyed him. But some of the boys didn't like him. So the reason was he did some, like, he'd teach us techniques, like, you catch the ball if you can see. He'd like, make sure you like point towards the ball like that. So it was a bit of a running joke doing the Leif Hansen. You know how rugby players are with these kind of things. So it kind of was a running joke with the boys. But yeah, it's funny to me, and it'll be funny to the boys that know it, but it's kind of one of those, you got to be there type to know the story. But
yeah,
but to answer actually serious, who my favorite coach is, I don't know, I've been pretty lucky, I reckon, like the coaches I've had, because I've heard some stories of some coaches, and I'll put it this way, I just think I've had like very good relationships with all my coaches. Like, I haven't, like, it's key not to burn bridges, because, you know, I could have easily burned a bridge with Jamie Joseph for what he said to me, but he's the reason I actually got to Japan. So, like, it's probably a good lesson of, you know, don't burn any bridges, because you kind of never know, not that you need them, but you never know when they might be thinking of something or someone, and they think of how you acted at a certain time, and then they're like, oh, let's get this guy, because, you know, I basically shut him down, and he's still surviving, he's still here, so. Yeah, I couldn't pick out one coach, I'd say. That wouldn't be fair.
Yeah. when you're spoiled for choice, that's always going to be a tough one. And yeah, I think when you look back at your career, if you can take little tidbits or nuggets from some of the coaches that you've been given and pass that on to the next generation, I think that's all you can ask for, eh?
Yeah, no, that's what, like, I love, you know, getting around the younger guys. Like, I know how much I want to learn, and you know, I've been in their footsteps, you know, in their shoes a while ago now, not like yesterday. I just know how they're feeling. And like, I've been through, you know, I've been pretty lucky to play with some of the best players in the world, and then been coached by some as well. So any knowledge I can share, I reckon, is, it would be bad for me not to, you know, like, I feel like I need to share it. And yeah, young bucks asking questions, I always love, you know, telling them stories or giving them advice on how to deal with stuff, which, I enjoy that part of it. I like seeing young guys, like, make the step up and perform well. And yeah, it's because when I was young, I was looking for that as well. So, yeah.
Well, awesome, Jace. Thank you so much. We really appreciate you taking some time on your day off, especially ahead of your clash this weekend against the Free Jacks. And we wish you all the best of luck. But before we let you go, just wanted to give you a chance. Any final words, anything you wanted to touch base on?
It's just more to probably the LA fans. Like, thank you so far for, you know, supporting us. You know, I know results-wise, probably not the start that, you know, you and us are looking for, but, you know, we're trying to, you know, build something, you know, pretty special. We feel pretty lucky to be the first team to be called RFC LA, and hopefully, you know, we lay a foundation for the next, you know, generation to come. And we thank you for your support. We're just trying to get on the community. And if you guys ever need anyone or any coaches, you know, I'm free. Well, my wife and kids are at home, so I got a lot of spare time on my hands. But yeah, if anyone in the community needs, you know, help with coaching or anything, you know, I'm available. And yeah, you can get me at Instagram or whatever. No, a little shout out. Get my followers up. We just want to, you know, we can build this together. You know, it's not gonna straight away be us at the top. You know, it's slowly got to put rocks on for us to succeed. But yeah, we do appreciate you guys supporting us and jumping on this ride with us, which is going to be fun.
Nice. Well, yeah, thank you, and I appreciate that. I know your phone's going to blow up now that you've thrown down the gauntlet and you're offering your expertise, so it's going to be good stuff. But yeah, it's going to be good fun.
No,
Well,
absolutely.
thank you so much for everyone listening. Be sure to tune in or come and watch the game at Dignity Health in Carson. It's going to be a festival of rugby this weekend. I can't wait to see how many people turn out and watch it. But tune in next time. We've got another amazing episode coming this way. Thank you again, and Jason, I really appreciate you coming on the episode, and we will see you soon.